Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a student of startups, a connector, and an entrepreneur. He started out in brand management for Unilever, where he spent almost 2 years and became one of the most successful marketers in the history of the company. He was then picked up by Centoria, where he acted as their entrepreneur-in-residence for 8 months. And after this, he attended a startup incubator, where he came up with an idea, assembled a team of neuroscientists, and launched a product and business called TrueBrain. TrueBrain is a performance food and drug brand that helps entrepreneurs and high performers achieve their best. Now, let's hack Chris Thompson. Today's episode of Hack the Entrepreneur is brought to you by Braintree. You remember your first dollar you made? Now you want to grow and make your millionth or your billionth. Have you found the right payments partner to grow with you? Braintree lets you accept every way to pay, from PayPal to Apple Pay and everything in between. All it takes is one simple integration. And it doesn't matter what currency your customers use, because Braintree lets you accept over 130 of them. To learn more about how you and your company can grow with Braintree, visit BraintreePayments.com/hack. That's BraintreePayments.com/hack. Check it out now. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. Today we have a very, very special guest. Chris, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, John. Appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely my pleasure. This is going to be an absolute blast, I can tell.
Yeah.
Let's jump into it, Chris. Chris, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Yeah, I mean, I guess a couple things come to mind just in, you know, immediately pretty much. And I think that, so I'll just go with what comes to mind without trying to pick the, you know, the perfect answer, since a lot of times these are difficult, right? Like the one thing, of course, you know, if you're on these panels, you go to these events, it's always annoying when somebody says, well, there's never one thing, et cetera. So, you know, it's like the question that you get, well, name a typical day. And they say, and everybody loves, such a trendy answer to say, well, there's no typical day. It's like, oh, wow, you're so interesting. Fine, what were you doing at 3:30? Fine, show me your phone. What text did you send at between 3:30 and 4:15 on Tuesday then, if you want to get really specific, right? But I think, you know, one thing for me was really, I was a pretty big student of the game in getting into startups before I got into them. I really studied them, and not just passively researching and reading, but I would actually actively, you know, open up conversations, meet people, you know, of course at local networking events in New York, but I would also get on the phone with, you know, I'd see people on a panel, you know, like a GSB Stanford panel, and I would actually email them after and say, like, ask, you know, just to connect and get a couple more like burning questions that I had going. And what that all amounted to essentially was getting these, you know, really these rules down that you should follow. So I'm pretty big on not reinventing the wheel. So I would say that a large part of my success is following, you know, various best practices. And, you know, it's never as easy as it sounds just to follow something. But I definitely think that, like, the lean methodology, for one, if I had to pick one best practice, you know, if that's my rule that I'm going with now, you know, for this answer, it's following best practices, not reinventing the wheel. And I'd say the biggest one of that would be the lean methodology and trying to, you know, apply that to everything, like to stop talking, musing, hand-wringing, you know, talking about hypotheticals, and force action, force something out the door, force something into the market and quickly get feedback. Because what I think that, you know, why is that difficult, right? Like becomes, if that's such a big thing for me, like why is that hard to follow? It sounds, you know, sounds easy. It's just, it just basically runs counter, it seems, to every smart, successful person. You know, they don't work in this way. Like school does not work in this way, as far as I know either, right? It's not like if you have a paper due that you hand in, you immediately hand in a total piece of shit and then wait for feedback on that and see what happens, right? You have to, you procrastinate, you hand ring, you muse, you stress, you procrastinate some more, you might outline it, and then you wait until it's perfect, right? And then you hand it in at the last second. That's how the human brain works. So I think that deeply wired in people, and like myself, but I also notice it in a lot of people that we have on the team, especially right out of school, they're even more wired in this way. I'm sure there's good examples. I'm sure there's a sector of your listeners now that are thinking, no, my training was different. My school was different. We had this, you know, engineering program where it was lean and we actually followed these things. And that's great. That's awesome. And you know, lean and Eric Ries has an effort underway right now to actually get that more embedded in curriculum. And we met recently with an alumni group that was trying to do that. So, but that's an aside, but I think deeply embedded is, you know, the way we work and the way that we, you know, get wins as humans and anything structured isn't that way. So that was really forcing that discipline and forcing that frenetic speed over what people love to do is just, you know, they would much prefer talking about things. The human brain, you'd much prefer talking about these ideas and then wondering what would happen next. And what's very difficult for people to understand. And also it's a little bit of swallowing your ego as well, because essentially the message to people who join the team as well has to be, we don't really care what you think. So we don't care what you think. And that's disturbing, right? And that's, well, what are you hiring me for? What are you paying me for? What about, I'm very smart. You should care what I think. Well, we do, but that's, you know, but the provocative statement still stands that we don't really care what, we don't want to know what your prediction and musing is about this. We want to know from the target market, somebody outside the building, some outside human we want to hear from, because we don't count. If you're on the team and you're wondering, oh, how will someone react to this message? What about this design? What about this branding? What about this product? What about this packaging? Could be anything. We want to know what the person in the target market, whether that's you're trying to get an investor and you're doing a pitch deck, will figure out quickly from somebody who is an investor, who could act in the same way or give you that feedback, thinks about anything before, you know, over getting too theoretical in-house. So I think that's something that we really followed. And when I got into the tech accelerator, that was definitely a part of how they worked.
With this, Chris, you need to clarify this for me, because it either seems like you have evolved from when you originally would go to networking events. And as you said, the very, very first thing you said was a student of the game of startups, even before you got into startups, to forcing and taking action. So from being a student to forcing and taking action, either you just completely contradicted yourself, which is cool because that's something I do all the time, or this is like an evolution or a revolution that sort of happened in your mindset where, because I think, although I love the fact that you said, and I'm a huge proponent of go out there and learn, go out there and ask people smarter than you questions. This is an amazing way to learn and to get started. At some point, like you said, you have to stop and you have to force action on an idea. And it can't get any better. It's not going to get perfect. Just get it out there and stop thinking about it, right? So is there like a time you can go back to and think that, yeah, there was a time where I was like, okay, I know enough to start.
Yeah. I mean, so inherent in that is if you take it to the extreme, and I wasn't a student prior, I was actually a corporate drone.
Student of the game of startups. Like you wanted to learn. Right? You wanted to take information in, which is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to really unpack like why, because I had the luxury of of having a, you know, a corporate job that, you know, I could take some time, you know, nights, weekends, et cetera, and just, you know, off time to really start to look at, you know, figure out like what themes were happening and what was successful. And just doing all those teardowns on these companies, it was producing, you know, these different themes of how, you know, how you get to these places and how you launch something so quickly and how you try to get on the board with a base hit in the startup space. And you know, you watch these panels, you go to these events, and, you know, time after time, these consistent themes come up from a lot of smart, successful people. And one of these was, you have to really be fast and you have to follow this lean methodology. And, you know, beyond the learning of it, it was literally like, you have to, you know, you have to launch something quick. I mean, if you look at, you know, Reid Hoffman, LinkedIn, right? If you launched and it's great and you're not totally embarrassed, you took way too long. You wasted a lot of time because the market moves fast and you want to accelerate. You know, you're always going to be on this journey to get to a viable idea and your end state. And you want to start and have as many, you know, like you want to tack along that journey as quickly as possible, because you have to assume there's going to be a certain amount of readjustments, right? So it's trying to accelerate through those readjustments. And the way you do not get that faster is by talking amongst yourselves. So, but you do have to, but I guess to your point, you do have to, if you took it to the extreme, it's not like you can have zero talk. You have to produce, you just have to keep the talk contained and going for testable alternatives. That's like one of the recent refrains in our office, right? It's, you're only brainstorming, thinking, musing, you know, sketching, wireframing, everything up to the point of a testable alternative. Once you have testable alternatives, it should be out in the market getting rapid feedback.
Right. But also how you said you were lucky enough to have a great corporate job that allowed you on the side to go to these great networking events, to talk to these people, and then to follow up by email with deeper questions. This is something that anybody can do. It's not like you have to, well, get rid of my job. Now let's learn how startups work. You kind of got to do that sort of on the side and then jump in. And then, correct me if I'm wrong, but you went startup incubator, this is with TrueBrain now, and then straight to assembling a team of neuroscientists to launching your first product in 5 different countries. And this took place in how long of a time span?
Not, so there's a couple steps, I guess, well, at least a few in between. So I was at Unilever in a brand management role, and I was, at this point, that's when I'm talking about being a student of the game, right? So that's when I was taking some of my spare idle time to really, you know, figure out how, with this interest that I had, you know, what kind of startup themes made the most sense. And plan A was to come up with my own idea that I felt comfortable enough that met, you know, my kind of requirements to be really analytical and put this in a scorecard and make sure it's risk adjusted as much as possible, and, you know, leave and say, okay, hey guys, I'm leaving this corporate job and I'm starting XYZ and I'm super excited about it. Right. And I didn't get there though. I didn't get to an idea that I felt like I could leave this corporate job for. I had done all this. I had done tons of networking in New York. I mean, I had met with a bunch of teams. I had looked at going to, you know, joining a team was plan B, really. So it's joining a startup team where I could learn from them. And then, like a lot of people in the startup world, with aspirations to then start their own thing. So I met with teams like at, you know, Bonobos and Foursquare and Betterment. And there was a whole, you know, tons of kind of interviews and meeting teams and trying to figure out if there was a team that was early enough that really met my personal interest, which was, when I think about the startup world, it's like the discovery phase. So once a company was post Series A and B, it was too defined of a role for what I was looking for, because, you know, then it's just more of a job, right? At that point, I mean, you have a salary and it could be a company with a bit more sex appeal and high growth, but it was still just a role. So I'm going to all these events in New York. I'm wondering, you know, will any of this relationship building as well end up coming through? Because, you know, I would meet people and occasionally they would want some guidance on help, you know, just free advice, free help, whether it be just feedback on some things or help them model some things. And I would take some of my, you know, you know, if it's 80-20, I guess, you know, you take some of your 20% idle time at Unilever, and I would, you know, do some just free work, you know, free thinking for them, right? Do some free analysis. And then, you know, you get in that kind of mutual value exchange that leads to some rich networking. But I was wondering, will this ever come through besides just building my LinkedIn connections? It did end up coming through because I got this EIR role. So I was the 2012 EIR for this group, Centoria, which was out of France, connected to the Publicis group. And they were trying to take their media publishing assets, very, you know, a small group of a few French guys were taking, and they had amazing artists and content creators and connections and access to all these celebrities with this thesis in mind that they wanted to do something for environmental sustainability. And they wanted, you know, to have an EIR to basically build this up and figure out everything from the business side to like, how could we, you know, create a viable idea around this that would be fundable by VCs, and then hire and carve out all the roles and do everything. So it was a, you know, pay cut with some equity upside and a chance to learn in a sprint role that was, you know, these are the EIR roles are typically 6 months or so, you know, so this was kind of 6 to 9 months, and I got them set up with a social commerce platform around sustainability. So we do kind of content driven small run items that we would then sell that would donate back to the particular cause of the celebrity. And these guys had access to, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio and just a huge amount of celebrities, Ted Turner, you know, Harvey Weinstein. They were personal friends with a lot of them, you know, and these were some pretty wealthy individuals and LPs that were in the fund. So they, and I think a lot of people want to help out with the environment. So that was unique. And then, you know, in that experience, so I'm got to learn on with someone else's project on their dime, started to really figure out what I could potentially get into, what made sense looking at all the different factors for me to get into myself. And at that point, then I applied to a bunch of startup accelerators with my idea, which was an idea that I had hatched a few years prior at Unilever around why can't we measure what's going on in the human brain, like I can measure when I'm out cycling, for example. And that's almost as simple as it was, really. I mean, the rest gets a little bit more complicated, but
right. But it's
when I'm out cycling, why can I measure heart rate, cadence, elevation, wattage, power, and why some days I feel really sluggish, yet I'm going fast. Some days I feel great, yet I'm going slow. Why can I, you know, I get to measure all of that, and then I go back in the office, and some days I can do everything very quickly, you know, concentrating on all the right things, not going down rabbit holes, you know, constantly able to just get through the day more efficiently. And I'm back, you know, in the city enjoying, you know, the after work time, getting out of the office quicker. And then other days, you know, not as good, right? Why can't we measure that? Like, what is going on? Because that's really what I arrived at, is that's the only weapon you have, I think, now, unless you find some very interesting pockets that are protected. The only weapon you have now is to be more efficient, because there's, you know, working more hours has been arbitraged away. That's no longer a unique advantage. There's somebody else that's perfectly willing to outwork you in the local market, and certainly internationally in the global marketplace. So, you know, that was kind of a big theme coming out of business school, whether my friends were in consulting or banking, you know, general manager and brand manager, it was, you can't really just get ahead by working after dinner. You can go out, have some drinks, go to the gym, get dinner, get home. And you're not going to be able to get ahead by logging back on from 10:15 to 11:45 and shooting a few emails and, you know, working more on projects. That wasn't enough. So then what's the only weapon we have left, given the fact that you have to sleep, is to be more efficient. And how can we be more efficient if we can't measure the right things? And what we want to measure is in, you know, in between the ears. So that was what I set out to try to solve. And of course, I had known about some things that I felt like could optimize, but we wanted to make sure first. And the first step is the measurement. And when I got into Start Engine in LA, it was right on the border of UCLA. And I started getting to know all the folks in the neuroscience department, and eventually through, you know, word of mouth and relationships, et cetera, made my way to Andrew Hill and built the neuroscience team around him. And he was doing precisely what I've been looking for. He measures with our collaborative lab here in LA. He measures brainwaves for artists, CEOs, you know, doctors, actors, you know, creators, everything throughout the week. He's doing that as his practice here at the Peak Brain Institute. And you can actually see when they're having their great days, what are the brainwaves and what are the makeups of the different brainwave ratios through QEEG. We can measure all of that. And then we're unpacking all these different solutions to really be a guide for people to be more efficient. And that's, you know, also known as productivity, right?
And so this is True Brain. This is like your new company. So again, though, at the beginning, you now said one of your principles is to not reinvent the wheel. And so somebody might be listening right now, and it sounds like you are on cutting edge of like neuroscience at this point, which is kind of reinventing the wheel. Or did you see, like, ultimately, for those who don't know, there's like a giant market and now research going into nootropics. Nootropics, and from my layman understanding, the most basic sense of a nootropic is coffee is a nootropic, where it like causes a reaction in your brain and heightens you in certain ways, but obviously has detrimental effects, coffee. But there are now new ways. So did you see this, or did you mean, Chris, that you're not reinventing the wheel as in how you're building the business, but you can be reinventing the wheel in the market that you are going into?
Yeah, I mean, I guess a couple of things to clarify. So yeah, I mean, the process-based attempt, like the how, you know, I was big on the how is, you know, when I'm looking at studying and trying to unpack all these things, it's, you know, these people who have been successful, they really preached, you know, the lean methodology. So I guess in arriving at, you know, one major theme in our process-based attempt, it's like very much the lean startup method. And that was my way to say, okay, well, I don't want to reinvent the wheel. Like, I don't want to repeat these mistakes of everybody else. Like, what was the way that they went about things that got them these wins? Because I'm looking around in the corporate environment and I'm being like, I'm pretty sure it's not what I'm looking at right now. I guess that's, if you want to go back to like, I'm just trying to think back to that era, like, you know, to get at what was behind this search that you're asking me for. So I'm looking around the room and saying, I guarantee that what we do here will not produce a startup win, right? Like, that's obvious as anything, right? We're this lumbering giant that's getting disrupted category by category by faster, smarter, more nimble, less political, less, you know, people less worried about who they're going to copy on an email to say the right things and get nothing done, right? So, and that's a skeptical point of view, but so I'm wondering, okay, well, what is it that I don't know? What's the, you know, what are the ways to do this? Because I didn't want to, you know, make these same mistakes. Now, great point. Like, and I am, you know, very much in a new category trying to, you know, define the rules of a category, but also using pretty novel methodology to get there. So I guess that would just be, there's no way to not reinvent, because as a human race, we don't know that much about the human brain. So it's not, that's more like I'm trying to invent the wheel, I guess, in a lot of ways, right? It's, we're trying to actually, you know, crack open this category and to be this guide around productivity. There's a lot of new novel education required, which is very difficult. You know, the education part and the guidance and all that is, it's really interesting to people, but it's costly and difficult to educate. So in that way, yeah, I mean, you can't be perfect with all, every idea is going to have its trade-offs. And for us, it's that education. So it's kind of repeating a problem that's definitely a known problem, that education is very hard. And that's kind of breaking 101 rules. So in that way, with the selection of this idea, we are reinventing the wheel in the sense of like doing a problem that's already known to be a big issue. And, you know, I think with a lot of startups, you have to pick your battles. And I guess that's the battle that we're going to try to take on and have been.
Was there any part of you that thought maybe everything up till that point, I mean, from the outside, it makes sense, but everything up till that point was such a logical evolutionary, from college to Unilever to being an entrepreneur in residence and then starting your own thing, but you started something big. And you started something with like scientists involved, which you're obviously not a scientist. So you needed to bring in that whole aspect of it. Was there a point where you ever stopped and like, maybe Chris, I should step back and take sort of a middle ground here for my first startup and then evolve into something bigger?
Well, I backpedaled from a number of larger ideas, and I actually considered this to be relatively bite-sized. So when I, you know, my goal was to, and this is something that I, again, what I was pretty much told by a lot of people was, if you're dying to be an entrepreneur and are likely, you know, you think you'd be a serial entrepreneur or at least start along that general path, and then maybe you'll go into the VC world, or maybe you'll go back to corporate or whatever you might do after that. That was at least like what I thought the path that I wanted to start. Now, the best way, according to, you know, kind of consensus from the people that have done it in the startup world, I mean, just to go back to your point, everybody's like, most people are very, you know, generous, and they share so much about their stories, your guests, I'm listening to your show, but beyond that, these events, any locally, wherever people are, or just connect with them in general, people are very generous. So it's actually really nice in that way, because people want to give others the chance to go through the tough journey that they did, you know, and try to help them out and give people a chance. But I think that, you know, I looked at much, you know, much bigger ideas, and, you know, the advice was, just try to hit a base hit. So it's a baseball analogy of don't try to, if you swing for a home run, many times, you know, you're going to, you know, strike out, right? I guess is the idea. Like, but if you're just going for a base hit, you know, it's a much more controlled swing, and the odds of success are higher, right? I mean, that's at least the analogy, right? So for me, with my domain experience, the way that this particular idea, I mean, I was obviously really passionate about it. So you gotta be driven by the problem that you're trying to solve. And I was definitely, you know, driven by this. And then if you look at the rest of the scorecard, there's gonna be parts that are daunting, uncertain, you know, very dubious, and that the skeptic is going to say that's never going to happen, right? Because of course, if it had already been so easy, someone would have done it. Like, the market's pretty efficient, right? So there's got to be something very, very dubious and challenging and unlikely about things. But overall, in that scorecard for this idea, I already had the, you know, the brand experience, the packaged goods, the general management operating experience, like the P&L responsibility, which, so I actually felt pretty comfortable if our first product was going to be a widget that we would send out, you know, a monthly box of widgets. I was already, no matter what the idea was, I was already really comfortable with that from my prior experience. So if I was going to be like Mike at Dollar Shave Club, I'd be very comfortable doing that business. You know, I'd be very comfortable selling wine by the month, and there's 500 some odd subcoms, right? I mean, Nature Box with snacks and everything, right? So that's very much in my wheelhouse. In fact, like if you look at Procter & Gamble, Unilever, and Kraft, you know, those are kind of 1, 2, 3. That's like the top tier of packaged goods. So you would think at least that there's very few people with more qualified experience, maybe more years than I, if they stayed longer. But you know, that's very much in my wheelhouse. And then of course, yes, there's like to do, this is a very unique widget. This wasn't a cheap razor blade from Japan that we were just reboxing that now has their own subscription commerce with the Dorco Blaze or whatever. But like, so that is the tough part for this, but you know, but that's also with the interesting novel aspects came, oh wow, neuroscience and trying to solve these problems that not just, oh, no other startups have cracked. Like a lot of it is no other scientists or human beings have really cracked. No one can say exactly what's happening in the brain, and even the brainwave measurement, even the QEEG, that stuff is new and, you know, relatively new in terms of its normative database, like the mass of data that we can compare to really make conclusions is relatively new. So yeah, I mean, but we felt like the interest in that was high enough to override the experience. And of course I didn't have the experience, but you know, Andrew and the neuroscience team that we had, they were, you know, this was their world. They were, you know, they were cutting edge and world class at this. So that's, you know, therefore that's the collaboration, right? So I brought the operating experience and the packaged goods, and then I was able to, you know, partner for the science specific part. And then we're left with like the difficult explaining this widget that goes in the box that you get every month is very difficult.
That's what I was going to say. So unlike, I mean, Dollar Shave Club, where, I mean, every man knows that they have to shave at some point. That's just how it is. But I find that because nootropics, just in the last 12 months, I've been introduced to them and how they work. But it's literally because another company reached out to me to educate me on them. Like, how much of your job is actually, I think once people are educated about it, they're going to want, the demand is going to increase, right? But unlike shaving, where it's like, well, we just know we have to shave. So what aspect of your job in business do you find is education to build up and sort of create this market?
Well, a lot of it, yeah. A lot of the, you know, the effort that we're going underway that, you know, that's underway now, that's a real struggle is on, this is a new category and a new product within that category. So new category, new product, that's a big, no matter what it is, that's a big challenge, because you're trying to convince people and produce this aha moment of sorts that, you know, for us, it could be, like the aha moment is, oh, okay, I get it. So caffeine is not the enemy. You're not saying that's awful. You're just saying that's about a 5 out of 10 is how good I could do. Right. So it's just better than caffeine alone. And that's like what, you know, the way that people will frame the, you know, the understanding of at least the category in itself. And then the product wise is, you know, trying to educate around, okay, well, it's something that it's a routine that you have to stick with. It's these nutrient dense functional beverages that you take daily, and you have to let the benefits build up. And it's, you know, just like you would, you know, take anything else like a green juice or anything, you know, it's morning and afternoon option as well for people who are more into it. And then you get much better focus and productivity throughout your day than just caffeine alone. But sure, I said it there, but like the challenge is how, and maybe that wasn't even that good. I
mean, that was quite good.
But you know, that might sound great for us internally, but the judge of if it's good is, are listeners nodding their head, or do they have a lot more burning questions, or maybe it didn't make sense at all, right? So I mean, that going back to who cares what I think and we think, it's like getting it into the, you know, producing these messages, getting it in front of the people that matter. And then, you know, but there's so many different avenues to do this. I mean, we're working on this larger guidebook around productivity that we have underway, but there's also, you know, just every way that we get this out there, whether it be Facebook ads or various designs, it's how do we educate with the least amount of friction, quickest, that make people feel comfortable with the concept, and then also proving it. So, okay, let's say you fundamentally, you're willing to believe that there's potentially something better than what you think of as coffee, right? I mean, the need state behind coffee is, I don't know, alertness, waking up, getting things done, whatever. That basket of needs that people reach for a caffeine source, the idea is, okay, did you know that there's something even better that works much better with the underlying, you know, to be very soft. It's not good enough for our validation. So I guess what I'm getting at is the second part of it is, okay, sure, you believe the construct, you're accepting that construct that there's something that you could do that's better than caffeine alone, but why would I believe this product does it? And that's the other part of the interesting content education that we have underway is explaining and showcasing and doing different, making it come to life with content. And one of the things that we're doing now is we're doing these tours of our just, you know, friends in the startup space down here in LA, going office to office, actually getting them on these trials of our drinks and then measuring their brainwaves. And, you know, one of the interesting findings is what I've been, you know, the latest way to explain it is, if you remember, you know, like what it's like to be in the zone, if you think about Michael Jordan when he was in the playoffs, and there's that famous picture of him shrugging after hitting these shots, which I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I think I do. Yeah.
And he was saying, I don't know what's happening. It's just, I'm in the zone. Everything I'm, you know, shooting up is going in no matter how difficult it is, or if I get fouled or whatever happens. Right. So, and he's saying, I don't know. So what we're saying is with current neurotechnology, we do know what it's being in the zone is like, and we know it's super elusive. And we know that there's certain brain waves which can lead you to, you know, to get you on the edge and provide that opportunity to be in the zone or the flow state or just a more effective state than, you know, than normal, than just caffeine or nothing. And it works. It's you know, supporting your natural process. So it's more raw materials that your brain is actually consuming throughout the day when you're thinking. And it's adding in more of those because we are depleting those resources like crazy now with the amount of stress and with the amount of task switching. And we know that task switching and multitasking is something that people like to brag about. It's, I'm so good at multitasking. Well, you're burning resources in your brain like crazy doing that. It's, you know, there is a clutch. If, you know, when cars like used to have manual transmission, I guess, so it's not as good of an analogy anymore, but they still have a clutch or something, right? But, you know, it's, if you're going through so many different gears and stop and go traffic, you know, you're burning your brakes and your gears, and that gets depleted throughout the day. And if you don't put in, if you don't, you know, supply your brain with nutrients and raw materials to be able to replenish what you're burning, then you're going to, your quality of work will go down the more that you're stressing and multitasking, combined, of course, with sleep, diet, meditation, workouts. And there's a, I mean, it's not a simple problem. It's not a simple equation. And we're only, you know, humbly, we're only saying that we're providing one piece to the diet part to the overall productivity equation, which if you're sleeping and meditating and working out, we're happy to say that you might not even need it, because that's a lot more credible and authentic and believable than saying you must drink our drink no matter what. It's the magic potion that works and there's nothing else that's going to get you there. But from a diet standpoint, there is nothing that you can get from just eating, you know, whole foods that are going to get you these same raw materials. And we are unique in the sense that we're the first functional beverage to have active nootropics. But that category is only one piece to the overall equation to try to get the most ammo that you can to really be productive and to do your best work and your best thinking throughout the day. And a lot of times it's because people want to get more done faster and get out of the office and enjoy the rest of their lives, which is a good, potentially a worthy goal as well.
Yeah. And the Michael Jordan story of being in the zone, that to me explains it so well. And interestingly enough, Chris, that anybody that I've talked to about either True Brain or nootropics as any sort of supplement from either company, but it is so effective when used properly of getting you into that zone that you were talking about, that people actually sometimes get like afraid of it to the point where it's like, that seems like cheating, like but it's literally your body is like lacking in these, because like you said, it's like you're switching and multitasking and doing all these things, which eats up these raw materials in your body that then get replaced. And I think once you get people to try it and get over that, like it is so obvious that you're lacking these things when they're replaced that it's stunning. It really is.
Right, right. Yeah, no, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, I think that, you know, there's a brainwave state that's, you know, that can get you, you know, the closest, I guess, you know, another way to think about it, just, you know, in case people are interested in kind of the underlying biology behind it. I mean, your brain sort of has, if you can think of it like an orchestra that has five instruments, they're always playing at the same time. And sometimes it's very noisy and sometimes it's in great harmony. And the brainwave ratios work in the same way. Your brainwaves are always going. It's just a matter of what frequency and what are the ratios between those frequencies in the different areas of the brain. And for being in the zone, to keep it relatively simple, it's, you know, that high frequency alpha brainwaves in the frontal lobe that's really when you're going to do, you know, and then you have to look at like the ratio to beta there. And if beta is at a medium or lower level, then that's going to be, you know, your kind of ideal brainwave state. I mean, the caveat is, of course, to get really deep into that, we'd have to bring Andrew on the show, and there's a lot to it. But, you know, for the basic takeaway, I mean, that's, you know, that's really it. And the fact that we can uncover that and see how it's very difficult to get that under stressful conditions, which is when you want to be in the zone the most, right? Jordan wants to be in the zone during the playoffs. You know, if you're, you know, great athlete, or, you know, you have to do your best work when the pressure's on. And that's when it's actually hardest to replicate that brainwave state, which is, you know, that's finding your greatness would be your ability to do that in a lot of ways. The more that you advance and get into where it's kind of coming down to the big moments in your career, if you're starting out as an analyst and you're kind of under the gun every day and you get to produce a high volume of output that's all about the same weighting, then perhaps you can get by with, you know, just more brute force. But as maybe you would agree with this, you know, as you get later in your career, it's less and less, you know, less and less visibility kind of behind the scenes in what you're doing, and more about what you come up with in the big moments, or for the big presentation, or for the big deliverable, or, you know, a lot of it's team stuff and managing other people, of course. But it's really about the key moments that you have to be prepared for, rather than somebody getting to see your entire body of work all the time.
Exactly. Very well said. Very well said. Well, I think, without going too deep, like you said, and bringing the doctor on, Andrew, I think for us entrepreneurials, you have said enough to, I'm sure, spark people's interest. So right now, Chris, I would love it if you could tell people where to go find out more about your business.
Sure. I mean, we have everything on, you know, our site's probably the best place. It's trubrain.com, TRU brain.com. And we have, you know, all of our social channels are up there. I mean, we have a lot of great blog posts and content and things like that. And people can learn more about this category. We'll be coming out with our own clinical trial shortly as well, that has using the quantitative brainwaves that we talked about to do just what we said around validating the brainwave state that we achieve with these products. And yeah, if people want to give it a shot, you know, we'd love to see what they think and get more feedback.
Excellent. Trubrain.com, TRUBRAIN. Eric Ries's Lean Startup has been talked about a lot on this, so I will link to both of those in the show notes for you to track down today, as well as some social media for Trubrain. But definitely go over to the blog and check out some of their articles, because it is really, really interesting stuff, what it can do for your productivity and for your work and your life in general. So, Chris, thank you once again so much for taking the time to stop by. I really, truly, truly appreciate it. And just please keep doing what you're doing, man, because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Yeah, you got it, John. Thanks a lot for having me on. That was fun.
That was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for joining me, Chris. And thank you out there for joining Chris and I in this conversation. We went a little off topic into nootropics. Nootropics are a really fascinating thing that I've been introduced to in the past year. I mean, coffee itself is a nootropic. And once you understand it like that, then I had, if you go back in the episodes a little bit, the Bulletproof Entrepreneur was on the show, and he's all about the nootropics and, I mean, Bulletproof Coffee and stuff. I've been drinking Bulletproof Coffee daily now for months. It's amazing. But it was cool to get to talk to Chris about this, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. But I had to go back. I had to go back and listen to this conversation to find something. So I went back and I listened. And then I went back and I listened again. And when I listened back to it, there was this one thing that Chris said to me. This one thing that was so very, very clear. That one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
Just try to hit a base hit. So it's a baseball analogy of don't try to, if you swing for a home run, many times, you know, you're going to, you know, strike out, right? I guess is the idea. Like, but if you're just going for a base hit, you know, it's a much more controlled swing, and the odds of success are higher.
And that's the hack. Chris, I love this. Just go for a base hit. Don't swing for the fences. Although it's awesome to hit a home run, it's a lot harder and it's a lot easier to strike out. So I love this conversation because, to me, TrueBrain, going to a startup incubator and coming up with an idea for TrueBrain and recruiting five neuroscientists, to me, is not a base hit. But it's completely subjective. I like that. I love how this is completely subjective. A base hit to me might not be a base hit to you. A home run to me might not be a home run to you. That doesn't matter, right? It's only what you choose. But when you have these big ideas and you want to hit a home run, think about it. Like when baseball teams, I'm not a sports person. I'm not even going to pretend, but I do know this as an analogy that you typically try and hit singles or doubles, right? More than you do to hit home runs. And if you just can keep hitting singles and doubles, you'll fill up the bases and you'll start bringing people home. You can do this with products. You can do this with services. You can do this with businesses. Start small. Slowly work your way up into bigger and bigger things. And you'll just, it will work and it does work. And it's so much truer than putting so much time and effort and working for months or years to come up with this one giant thing and then have it hit the fence rather than go over as a home run, and then you're defeated. Don't aim for the fences. Go for a base hit, not a home run. Thank you, Chris. That was very, very cool. All right. Thank you again so much for joining us today. HackTheEntrepreneur.com/iTunes. If you are on an Apple device, it'd be very cool if you went there and left a rating and a review for the show. It would help so much. If you're not on an iTunes Apple device, if you're on an Android, HackTheEntrepreneur.com/Stitcher. Yeah. Actually, if you're on an iTunes device, an Apple device, you can go HackTheEntrepreneur.com/review. It's even cooler. It takes you right to the review page. It's slick. HackTheEntrepreneur.com/review. But ratings and reviews at either Stitcher or iTunes would help the show and me immensely. And I would thank you very, very much for it. It'll help us continue to grow and get cooler and cooler guests. All right. It's been an absolute blast. Don't forget to check out the show notes for Chris at HackTheEntrepreneur.com. You'll see it sitting up there. If you don't, there's a search box right to your right-hand side. Chris Thompson is his name. Track down the show notes for this and check out TrueBrain. See what he has to say. All right. It's been a blast. Thank you so much. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.